Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Indie Heads Podcast. I'm your host, Maddie, aka Recon EG. On this week's podcast, we have
Ethan.
That's Ethan. That's it. Okay, yeah. We're kind of recording this after we did an interview with Shauna from War on Women. So
yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Which is going to be a little later on the podcast. So hopefully, yeah. You guys, you know, we're gonna make sure this podcast is real long and nice. Or this part of the podcast is real long and nice to, you know, kind of prep you for the interview. You know, we have to, you know, hype up the interview a little bit because it's a great interview.
We're like the hype men for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. We got to be. You got to be hyping. I mean, we're still a small podcast, so we have to be our own hype men. I mean, we can't afford them just yet. Oh, okay. Well, anyways,
we're starting a Kickstarter to buy a hype man. Please go to Kickstarter.com/notarealKickstarter.
Mm-hmm. Go to Kickstarter.com/IndieHeadsPodcast. This is a fraud. Kickstarter.com. Anyways.
Yeah, I forgot that .com. There's a www, I think, in there. Okay.
Anyways, let's get to what we're listening to this week. We just wrapped up the podcast awards, which was three podcasts worth of stuff, and it was like fucking...
Sorry, I couldn't be there.
That's all right, man. I think the podcast went really well. I think our album of the year discussion went very well.
If I had to pick one of the three to listen to, which should I listen to?
I would listen to the last one we did.
Okay.
Where we talk about, I think we talked about Kendrick for like 40 minutes. It was like a really, we did, because it was a really good discussion.
Yeah, you can't, and like you, it deserves 40 minutes. It deserves a whole fucking podcast. Like you can't, an album is just so immense. Like you can't. It's almost like too hard
because we didn't even cover everything, and I was still like, I wish we could have covered more stuff. But like, we're running up, like we're getting close to like an hour and like an hour and 40 minutes. We got to wrap it up.
We're gonna do one of those analysis podcasts just of To Pimp a Butterfly.
It's we're like, just going to analyze the song King Kunta. That's it.
for a whole podcast. It's track by track, hour long episodes. It's gonna be like the X-Files. Mm-hmm. Male Nanjiani.
So anyways, yeah, so I listened to a lot of albums to prepare for that, you know, podcast wars, but I do want to talk about some that I did listen to that weren't a part of that preparation. So the first one is Little Ugly Mane, Oblivion Access. If Kendrick did not come out, this would be my hip-hop album of the year, because this album, it is... Have you listened to it yet, Ethan?
I have not.
This is right up your lane, because it's like really good experimental hip-hop, where it's got like elements of noise and all this just, oh god, it's...
But he has such a big... The thing that really overwhelms me every time I want to check it out is like, oh my god, he has such a big discography outside of this, too.
Oh yeah, I think this release is, like, kind of outside. Like, it's very different. It's sort of like, here's the thing, I've been listening to him since, I think, like, 2013, so, like, a little bit after, like, around the time that, like, the Third Side tape stuff started, getting dropped.
Yeah.
So you see his progression from, you know, Miss a Thug Isolation, which is sort of, you know, essentially it's kind of, you know, not really parodying, but sort of kind of like paying tribute to like Memphis rap and then adding his own sort of like experimental elements to it and all the influences he had beforehand. Because like he had been in, you know, noise bands, you know, he'd been in, you know,
really
metal bands. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
I think he would like really enjoy his Third Side of Tape, which is like a 2-hour long compilation that features. No. I think he would like it because it's filled with like all these like random genres. Because like he'll go from like instrumental hip hop to like random Lucy's to like a noise song to like a heavy metal song. It's like kind
of only
insane.
A couple bucks too, right?
Yeah, I think it's only $4. But actually, Blooming Access is free though. So it's,
yeah, I downloaded Limited Access. So if I had to check out, if like you had to sum up his discography in two albums. Like, that would be a fair...
If I had some of the Scorpion 2 albums, it would be this album, Oblivion Access, and then Miss a Thug Isolation. Like, those are the two albums you have to check out, because they're really, his only... I think he had an album before...
God damn it. Sorry. My mic keeps dropping.
I think he had an album before Miss a Thug Isolation, but it wasn't really that good.
Okay.
It was just sort of like, let me test out the style.
So, Miss a Thug Isolation and Three Side of the Tape.
No. Miss a Thug Isolation and Oblivion Access, which I'm going to talk about right now. It's difficult to talk about this album because there's so much going on, but I listened to it.
Damn it, fuck. Okay, I'm going to hold my mic.
Ethan, just hold your fucking mic, seriously, dude. This is unprofessional, okay? We're getting ready to do an interview with someone, and you're just doing this to me right now?
We did the interview.
It hasn't happened yet for our listeners. Anyways, Oblivion Access. This album, like I said, if Kendrick did not drop, this would be my hip-hop album of the year, because what this album does really well is that it's just, like, the perfect progression. Like you know, I've been following, you know, Lil Wayne for a few years now, and just seeing how he's been progressing and sort of, like, getting away from, like, his Memphis-inspired stuff, and then going into, you know, now this is, like, it's basically, you know, on Miss a Thug Isolation, he's playing a character. He's playing, you know, Little Ugly Mane. But on this album, Oblivion Access, the character of Lilith, I mean, it's slowly becoming, you know, demasked. And, you know, now the mask is off. It's like, this isn't Lil Ugamate anymore. This is, you know, the guy behind... This is the real person. This is, you know, Travis Miller or Sean Kemp, whoever you want to call him, by. And this album's very interesting because the lyrics are very, not abstract, but they are sort of poetic, like surprisingly poetic, which I think a lot of people would be really surprised by how good the lyrics are. Because, you know, they have a song like... my favorite song on the album is Collapse and Appear, which is like, it starts with this sort of like kind of ambient intro where it's like this, you know, this sort of like lo-fi-ish sample going off, and it's like, oh, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, you know, it keeps building, the sample keeps just building and building and building, and then like these sort of like trap influenced, you know, drums come in, and it's like, what the hell is going to go down? And then it's like, he goes off on the lyrics, you know, he used to laugh the loudest, now it never shows. He used to be he wanted to be the tallest in that. Anyways, God, I can't remember the lyrics. Again, I'm tired right now, guys. Like, Ethan, he got me up at freaking 9 o'clock today.
And I'm only running on, like... I didn't tell you to get up at 9. I said...
No, dude, 11 is 10 o'clock for me, Ethan.
Oh, right, shit.
So I had to get up an hour early.
Okay, yep, that's fair. I'm sorry.
I wish I was not tired so I could talk about this album.
That's what coffee is for.
I don't drink coffee. Anyways, the album is fantastic. There, like, I think a lot of people will be surprised that this, you know, when you hear the name Little Ugly Mane, people go,
yeah,
they already have, you know, like prejudices going in, like, oh, is this going to be like, you know, meme rap? And it's like,
you hear Lil and you're like, oh, Lil Wayne.
Yeah, you're thinking that, and he's gotten the reputation of being like meme rap, but I think this is album where he sort of like strips away that sort of tag that people have kind of put on him because of Mr. Thug Isolation, which is like, I mean, here's the thing: is meme rap bad? It's not, because my favorite band's Death Grips, so okay.
I love Death Grips, and I also love Das Racist, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like I think like it has a bad connotation, and there are some bad artists, but like there are some very good artists also. It's just like any other genre.
Mm-hmm. Meme rap is okay, people. It's not bad. Okay, you have to learn to accept memes. Anyways, but yeah, this album it is fantastic. It's maybe not the best starting point. Like, it depends on like where you're at. Like, if you really like experimental hip hop, if you like kind of more noisy stuff,
sounds like me.
If you like that, you're gonna love this album.
This first song is called "Ejaculated Poison Wrench."
Yep, he's a very crude person.
Okay, like, I dig. I can dig that.
He's not crude in, like, in the songs, but like some of his stuff, it can be seen as obnoxious. But like, it's like a mask kind of to kind of sort of hide away his emotions, because I feel like like on the surface, at least on "Mrs. Like Isolation," you would get songs that are like. Sort of, you know that scene, and I think it's in Empire Strikes Back. I don't know why I'm talking about Star Wars, but you know the scene where like you see like a little bit of Darth Vader's like head.
Yeah,
it's all messed up. Essentially, that's what Mr. Thug Isolation is. I mean, Darth Vader's pretty fucking ugly.
Yeah,
but sort of like on Mr. Isolation, you're seeing like parts of the mask kind of be taken off, but not quite. You're still seeing a guy with a mask, pretty much. You're still seeing a character.
Yeah,
but with this now, you are now, you know. Logamane has been, you know, he's unmasked, and like this is really him. This is the real person behind him. It's a very interesting. I'm surprised he did actually call it under a Little Ugly Mane. Like, I feel like he definitely kind of could have put on it. But I mean, I think just for, you know, like, I guess marketing, it's like, well, this is a Little Ugly Mane release. So, I mean, duh, probably should call it that.
Kind of reminds me of when what you're talking about is when MF Doom gets really personal, because he literally has a mask. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he has a lot of trauma from the experience when his the member of KMD died, his mm-hmm. really close friend. So he kind of is, and he's really isolated.
It's a physically. Way to like a way to cope, pretty much.
Yeah, but then you have a song like "I Wonder," where he's just like talking about the struggles of his life, and it's so personal. But he's still playing in this character of what is it? What's that album? That's King Ghidorah, I think.
King Ghidorah.
Ghidorah.
Okay, anyways, I'm not doing this album justice by talking about it. Seriously, go listen to it. Hopefully, I want to do a late night discussion on it whenever I'm not, like, super fucking tired. Hopefully, so.
I like how you say late night, not tired. Because you're a night person.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely a night person. Anyways, let's get into my next album, Aerial Pink Pom Pom. I decided to like randomly revisit this album. I don't know why. Like,
what
I
were we
was
talking
like,
about in the Skype chat?
Yeah, I did talk about it in the Skype chat because I was listening to it with my girlfriend. I don't even know what's that's
no labels.
No labels. I'm not again. It's not a labeling time at
your,
the moment.
Your girl with a U and a
girl
bunch
I
of...
went on a date with. There we go. Girl I'm there. talking to / went on a date with yesterday. Anyways, not you know that's a fucking humble wreck. I'm so sorry, guys. I'm really sorry. Anyways, pom-pom, decided to randomly just recheck it out, because I think my, I should probably put Dead Man's Bones on here, because she had me check out Dead Man's Bones, and I was like, oh wow, this is really good, and then it reminded me of, like, pom-pom, and I'm like, this is kind of, like, you know, similar to pom-pom, and I'm like, hey, we should listen to this album together, and she's like, okay, and it's, the album is, it is surprisingly spooky, like, it is, like, there's some tracks in here that are, like, very, like, not like oh god it's really scary, but it definitely was like, oh wow, this is like a you're little bit to... like Halloweenish,
like a little bit of Sane Clown Posse.
It's you could say that about Little Ugly Man, but you can't really say that about Arrow of Pink.
Okay, that just made me want to check out Little Ugly Man a lot less. But
no, he's not like
I'm kidding.
I swear to God,
I think he used to be my juggler, first album but... is very spooky. So keep going on that.
Okay,
so
yeah, Arrow of Pink, pom pom. Shit, I'm fucking up on this podcast. I really am. I'm so sorry, guys.
It's not that bad. You're apologizing for not being that bad.
Anyways, pop. If I had really given this album a chance back in like 2014, I probably would have had this as like my pop album of the year because it is a fantastic pop album. It's just like it's so fucking weird, like because it's very obvious that like the structures of these songs and how catchy they are. It's obviously, like, a pop album, but, like, you dig into it a bit more. You're like, oh, like, the stuff he's kind of, like, some of the instruments he's using or some of, the, like, the melodies and whatnot are very odd. Like, you have a track like Dinosaur Care Bears, which is, like, three songs in one. Like, the first track is, like, this, like, building and building and building, like, this sort of, like, lo-fi experimental shit. And it's like, oh, what's this building to? And then just, like, hard cut to, like, fucking clown music. And then another hard cut to, like, night driving music. And it's like, what the fuck? Again, it takes a lot of, like, crazy twists and turns. And it's just, it's a great pop album. If you're kind of, like, people, basically, it's sort of like, pop music's dead. You know, pop music sucks nowadays. Go listen to this album. It's not dead. It's fucking weird as shit. Or it's, because a lot of people, I think they underestimate pop as a genre. Because they just think of radio stuff. And it's like, there's a lot of stuff you can do with pop music. Like, it's not a limited genre.
My pop stuff that I'm enjoying a lot of is the bedroom pop stuff. You got Alex G, you got Elvis Presley, you got Katy Day making the most fucked up pop music, like the most weird, like, take on pop music I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
Or one of the most, I wouldn't say the most. But, like, yeah, there's tons of, it's just, you gotta look for it. Whenever someone complains about modern music, they just need to, it's just, they're not putting in enough effort, and that's fine. Like, you don't need to become a music nerd. It's not like you, but if you don't, I would rather you not complain because you're just not looking.
Oh yeah,
I think that's the difference between now and then. Like, you got,
back then, like, you were very limited on finding music. You had, like, no, limited
yeah,
options.
And now the radio, like, music was good. Like, you had the Beatles on the radio, you had the Rolling Stones, you had these amazing bands that are still fantastic today on the radio. Now you have the good music, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles of today are not popular. They're not, or some of them are. There's some great popular bands. I'm not saying that's, it can't happen, but a lot of great music is just harder to find.
The corporations, they've butt-fucked the entire music industry. And that's why you have to look to the underground. That's why you have great... Like I said, you're talking about bedroom pop. I mean, seriously, there's been tons of great pop releases. We talked about a couple of them on the podcast. Like, on the podcast awards, like, Empress of Me is a fantastic album. Yeah. U.S. Girls Half Free, which is on our top 10 list, which is fantastic. FK Twigs' EP is really good.
Yeah, you don't even have to get obscure like I was going. Like, there's great pop music that is just...
Not even obscure. Like, I mean, Carly Rae Jepsen, like, everyone's been talking about her album.
It's a great album.
I haven't listened to it enough to, like, but I just have, like, because so many people talk about it on, like, Pop Heads and whatnot, I'm just like, is it overrated?
I think it is slightly overrated, but that doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah, it's, like, still, I mean, I still enjoy it.
That doesn't mean it isn't good, my bad.
But it was just kind of like, okay, like, this is the Circle Jerk album, all right.
Yeah, it's kind of, like, I don't listen to much, if any, like radio pop, kind of that, or like dance pop, that kind of stuff, outside of like underground, or not underground, like more obscure Pitchforky stuff. So I don't know how much like my love of this album is that it got good reviews versus it's a good album. Like honestly, like I do enjoy listening to the album, but maybe I would enjoy other pop albums if they got good reviews. Who knows? Like maybe, like I'm being honest here. Like maybe,
I mean,
sorry.
because I just generally with mainstream pop albums, they're just like not that good because they're not made as albums. They're made just as like, let's see what singles we can get off the ground.
Yeah, especially with in the iTunes age, you don't need to sell an album.
I mean, again, there's still like pop albums from like big artists that are like not bad. Like I thought 25 was a pretty decent album. I didn't like love it, but I thought it was like okay. Like it was
20, who was that?
25 Adele.
Oh, okay.
It was good for it was good
Oh
for
yeah, that small indie artist, Adele.
it was good
No.
for what it was. I enjoyed 1989 for what it was. I thought that was a pretty decent,
Yeah,
mainstream
and I
pop
th
album.
there's
I did not care for Beat It Behind the Madness, so I thought that was not that good.
I've only heard I Can't Feel My or Can't Feel My Face, and I enjoy that song very much every time I hear it, but
I did a review for Weekend Sound for my school newspaper, and it's just like it's such an anomaly of an album because like the first half is like it's all over the place, but like it's okay. Like you have like the intro, which is like this sort of like essentially it's got strings, but it's not real strings. It's like synthetic stuff, and it's like oh this kind of feels fake. And they have this next track that's like oh this is huh it, I can't it's not Blood Orange, it's like some other artist, I don't remember his fucking name. And then you have like the Kanye West produced track, which is kind of underwhelming.
yeah.
But then you get like this like the song stretch of like Often, which is a fantastic song. And then you got Can't Feel My Face, another great song. And then The Hills, which is like, which if you haven't listened to The Hills, Ethan, you need to, because
All right.
that's a great song.
But I don't really like The Weeknd's earlier stuff because it's a bit more
Oh.
R&B. I
Oh, yeah, then you won't like this new album then.
Yeah, because I really like I Can't Feel My Face because there's this the bass line on I Can't Feel My Face is fantastic. That is such a good bass line. Like that kind I love that like dancey but like still dense sounding like that kind
It's
like I
Michael
think that
Jackson. It's basically just, it's Hi, my name is The Weeknd, and I'm putting on Michael
That's a
Jackson's
fair
a
point.
famous red leather jacket.
I think Daft Punk kind of did it with
Get
some of the
Lucky.
songs on Ra yeah Get Lucky and some of the other songs on Random Access Memories. Like, but definitely Get Lucky, that because that bass line is so good. Like, you kind of it's that kind of same idea where you can have this polished pop sound, but it's just and basically ripping off 70s, 80s songs, but it's still very good, like, because it's so dense sounding. That's what I like dense music generally.
Yeah, okay, so I've been talking about my stuff for way too long. Ethan, you want to go to your stuff?
Yeah, sure. To continue off of Maddie's spooky theme, I listened to the Paper Chases, Hide the Kitchen Knives. It's the only Paper Chase album I have on vinyl. Their stuff is relatively hard to find on vinyl, if I'm not mistaken. I found this when I was in Austin over the summer, so I had to pick it up because the Paper Chase are awesome. John Coggleton is awesome, obviously, for coming on the podcast and just being an awesome musician and producer. And this album just kicks so much ass. It's not my favorite Paper Chase album, but that doesn't mean it's not very good. They're just such a consistent band. His guitar work is so fractured and like Gang of Four inspired, and like but so much more extreme and just sharp and jagged. The guitar work on this album is just it's just so good and unlike anything real out there. Like I think the Pitchfork review for one of their albums said like when you want to listen to the Paper Chase, there is no other artist you can listen to but the Paper Chase. Like they are so one of a kind and unique. And I think that's really cool because they're very emo in the way that it's over the top emotional, but it doesn't feel annoyingly over the top. It just feels like so cinematic and big and orchestral almost, but it feels very cinematic is the way I like to describe it. It feels like you're seeing this giant like crane shot of like a city, and it's like, but instead of just like being a one comp shot, it's like going everywhere, and it's just super fast editing, and it's like the kind of like the Mad Max Fury Road of albums or bands, if that makes any sense.
I've never listened to, so I can't say. I can't agree or disagree.
But you saw Mad
Oh
Max,
yeah, that
so
was a good movie.
it's very good. Probably my favorite movie of 2016.
I can't mean 2015.
or damn it,
I can't say
I keep writing 2017 on my checks, but
I just can't say that. Sorry to get a little off topic. I can't say that Mad Max. I thought it was really good, but it was just sort of like, I mean, I had tons of fun watching it, but it was like, I mean, it's good, but like maybe a little overhyped.
I think it was a bit overhyped, but I watched it pretty early, so it was before it got overhyped. Yeah. I was kind of just going in with not too many expectations.
Yeah.
And I was so blown away. And just the direction and orchestration of everything. That's what, it's the same. It's very orchestral. It's almost like a dance.
Oh, yeah.
The whole movie, mm-hmm. which I really appreciated.
But, I mean, my favorite movie of 2015 was Star Wars.
Star Wars was something. We were tweeting with with AJ about how we're going to do our Star Wars special.
We do really need to do it. I think I'm actually seeing it this weekend again. I'm going on a date again to go see it.
Ooh. Sneaking that humble brag in
there. I'm sorry, guys. I'm happy. Okay, anyways.
Star Wars was great. And we were saying that we should just talk with Shauna about Star Wars for 30 minutes and not talk about her band or anything.
Oh, yeah. I would have preferred that. That would have been fun. But anyways, yes, please go back to talking about Paper Chase.
Yeah. I'm basically done talking about the Paper Chase. It's like the Mad Max of bands. If you like Mad Max, Fury Road.
Also, shouts out to John Congleton. Be prepared for John Congleton news very soon.
Yeah, soul album, think. Yeah, I'm super excited for that, because even if it doesn't sound like the Paper Chase, he has such a unique sound with his really like whiny vocals and really sharp guitar playing. It's gonna be good. I'm super excited. One of my most anticipated releases probably of 2016, if it's released in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
My second album, it's kind of an interesting story behind this. It's a Magnetic Fields 69 Love Songs. Obviously, incredibly well-known album, considered a masterpiece. I finally listened to the Magnetic Fields after hearing one of their songs in Bored to Death, which is a very fun TV show. Some awesome music. So this album is very, very, very long. It's like 2 hours, 40 minutes or something.
16, you might think it's a joke, like, oh, 69 love songs. No, there's actually 69 love songs.
It is a joke, but it is true. Like, there are 69 love songs on this album, and it's an incredible album. Every song is, some of the songs are barely songs. They're more just experiments or just really short things, but every song on here is amazing and worth the time to listen to. So I kind of spent like 2 weeks of my vacation, like just on and off listening to the album. And I finally finished it yesterday after 2 weeks of listening to it on and off. And it's just such a cute but also ironic and disturbing and sad, and it basically goes through a lot of just different aspects of love. Just it's not just like, oh, I love this girl so much. There's a lot of those songs, and they're really well done and just really fun and silly, but there's also like there's a lot more in-depth songs. There's some really genuine sad songs that are just really depressing to listen to, but also cathartic. It reminds me a lot, second movie comparison, but it reminds me of like the Annie Hall of albums. Have you watched Annie Hall, Maddie?
I have watched Annie Hall. Great movie. Yeah,
very good. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Of course it is. Fucking course it is.
It's a great movie. It's probably Woody Allen's best movie. Like, what do you want from me?
No. I'm just saying because you're, I mean, again,
yeah,
because Woody Allen is a neurotic Jew. You're a neurotic Jew, duh.
My Twitter bio is one half Coen Brothers, one half Jew, or one half Woody Allen, 100% Jew.
Okay, I'm sorry for the racist jokes, everyone. Let's continue.
It's fine. I make the same joke. Like, we don't, like, I'm a neurotic Jew who's going into film. Like, what do you want from me? I like Woody Allen. I don't like him as a person. I like his products. Creepy dude.
Oh, yeah.
But it's really, because like Annie Hall kind of just like goes, it's just a movie about relationships and love in so many different ways. It's funny, it's sad, it's real. That's what this album is. It's real. It's encompassing, it's all encompassing about love, and it feels just, it's just very, very real is the best term I can give it. And it is beautiful sounding, and the guitar and the electronics just work so well together.
Mm-hmm.
The Magnetic Fields have This is the only album I've listened to them or listened of theirs, but I've heard it's their best, and it's very, very good, and sets a high bar for the rest of their discography. So if their rest of their discography could still be very, very good, it can still be worse than this. And that's what I have. That's what I listened to recently. So yeah, this next you will listen to our interview with Shauna of War and Women. It was a lot of fun. We talked about music, politics. If you don't want to listen to us talk about politics, you probably should skip it because it's a good chunk of it. But yeah, I think it was a lot of fun, and we had a good conversation. We talked about some serious shit, and we had some laughs. And I really, that sounded really cliche. You'll laugh, you'll cry when you listen to our interview. But no, I thought it was a lot of fun, and yeah. So enjoy that.
We're going to Tran. No, we can't. We didn't do that.
And we don't need to rip off Fantano even more.
We already did that. We already did the transition thing for our
Fantano. For Fantano. Yeah, that was when it was good.
So anyways, we're gonna do hard cut to the interview. No, we're just gonna do a little intro.
I have a little audio. I have audio transitions I can find. I'll find it open. Like what's the term? Free use.
Give me audio a transition. Yeah, give me a transition, Ethan. Actually, no, yeah. I may. Yeah, just give me a transition.
I'll send you a file. This is fun. This is real fun.
This is right now. We're recording this. This is you guys are in the know about how we do the podcast now. Okay?
Yeah, it's like every other podcast. Like they talk about their personal plans. Like, okay, or are we gonna ask our intern to Google something now and then get sponsored by Squarespace?
I wish we had a fucking intern. That'd be awesome. And I mean, all right. Essentially, are just like our new cast members, just interns.
Yeah, basically.
Right, we're actually no. This is a podcast that's entirely made up of interns because none of us get paid.
Well,
we're all just here to do it for fun and get our scholarship credits.
Well, really? No, we do not get any scholarship.
No, we don't. This is just fun. Anyways, okay. We're gonna transition to the interview. Thank you guys for listening. For now, and keep listening to the interview.
See you in a second.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Indie Heads podcast. I am your host, Maddie, aka Recon AG. On this week's podcast, we have
Ethan, and we have a special guest. Could you please introduce yourself? Sorry. Sure. I was like, I'm going to say, please, after we say our names, you go, but I always forget to say it.
Oh yeah. Sorry.
I just thought I was so special that I didn't even have to say my own name, but I guess not that special of a guest. No. My name is Shauna. I sing for a band called War on Women in Baltimore, Maryland.
Nice. Woo. Nice. So, yes, so thank you, Shauna, for coming on the podcast and, you know, talking about the band and a number of other things. I think, Ethan, you're the one who set this thing up for us.
I did, because Shauna knows the story because I told it to her, but I kind of have a weird thing with the band, or it's not that interesting, but I'll tell it anyway, is that I was going to go see them in Baltimore at Soundgarden. They were playing an acoustic show, but then they were opening for Jamie Kilstein, who we had on the podcast a month ago?
Around a month ago.
And I'm like, oh, cool. I can just see them in D.C. It'll be easier. I don't have to drive to Baltimore. And then I couldn't go to that show. I missed the opening. But then I ran into War on Women at Busboy and Poets down the street from Tropicalia. And I'm like, hey, you should come on the podcast because I love the record and I've wanted to see you live forever. And yeah, so here we are. That's how this got set up.
So are you going to come see us at some point?
Yeah, definitely. Not even.
I think you're obligated now.
Yeah, I kind of am. I'll try to get it to the Metro Gallery show. That's February 6th, correct?
Yeah, February 6th, Metro Gallery in Baltimore. And I hope it's okay, but we'll invite you on stage and we'll just ask you questions about your life for a half an hour.
Please do and film it so we can put it on the
screen. Even exchange, okay?
That sounds fair. That sounds really fair.
Some serious performance art stuff.
Will you play the podcast before?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure everyone will be very interested to listen to our recording when they pay tickets to see.
Yeah, I mean, we're so punk, we're so unpredictable. Yeah, you just don't know.
don't even perform. You'll or you'll do like the Yola Tango thing where you have this wheel and you'll just like, oh, we're gonna act out an episode of Seinfeld today.
Yeah. Wait, they actually did that?
Yeah. Yeah, they had like a wheel that like a bunch of different options for what they would do that day. Like one of the options is like, we'll play I Can Feel the Heart Beating as One in entirety, or we'll act out an episode of Seinfeld. That was a real thing.
I would love to do that. I would love to see that live. I don't even listen to Yola Tango, but I want to see that live.
Yeah, that's...
I think I would be the guy that paid my money and would just be like, what the fuck? Play your song. This is awesome, but can you do this after you play your set? I could also stick around for that.
I think they would also play songs, but
see, you gotta warm up the crowd. You gotta the normies. You gotta kick out the normies. You know, if they're like, if you're doing the Seinfeld act and they're just like, I can't do this, and they leave, they're gonna be gone. They're not real fans. You know, they're not gonna stick through the tough shit. And then you get to, you know, the good show.
And you got some bass playing in there.
So. That's true.
Somewhere.
So let's get on to the interview.
We should probably get the interview.
I have to admit, I'm not a big expert on Yola Tango, but maybe we could try to find their number if you want to talk to them.
yeah, that's our next interview. We always book the same guests as Mark Maron, so we'll get Ira Kaplan on next, and then we'll Barack Obama. Okay, so I think a good place to start would be talking about some of your influences, musically, and like, because you write the lyrics, like for writing wise. I just, because you have a very strong sense of view and style, so I'm just wondering where that, if you have any direct influences for that.
Thank you. I don't know if I do. I'm certain I'm influenced by things, obviously. because my ears and eyes are open, but yeah. I think I spent, so in my youth, like in high school, my high school band, it was very much about, I would write a lot about, like just relationships and people, interacting, things like that. And then in my next band, which also was actually with our guitar player, Brooks, I moved to Baltimore to be in a band with him, God, in like 2002. Called Avec. And so that band, I kind of tried to get away from the, like, you know, singing about boys and relationships and things, and try to be a little more like poetic, or just, you know, lyrical, really, like in the sense that you would want, like just interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. And so the meaning to any song would be completely, you know, lost to anyone but myself, right? Like, it was not obvious at all.
Yeah.
And so I've sort of been trying to swing the pendulum the other way for War on Women, and be more direct, say what I want to say, but also make it interesting and not just sound like some sort of soundbite or feminism 101. Because even though some of these things that I'm singing about like are completely like feminism 101, it's like, still talking about abortion rights after all this time. It's pretty ridiculous.
But
it's
like, can we do it?
Yeah, still need to. And then, so can we do it in an interesting way?
Yeah.
That, you know, maybe grab someone in a different way, or just is funny, where, you know, we don't often get to be funny when we're demanding our human rights.
Yeah.
So it's like, can we occupy a weird, you know, fun, sassy space and talk about this stuff and then still like headbang?
Yeah, that's a good philosophy. I really get frustrated when you have lyrics that are just too dense to understand, but I feel like when with your lyrics, they are, you can understand what's happening, but they are well said, and I think that's a perfect balance.
Thank you.
And I think that they fit very well within like the genre, because I mean, you guys are a hardcore punk band, so like really, you know, that genre's kind of been known for more of its like directness in its lyrics.
Yes.
And at first, like, I'll just be honest, on my first listen, I was like a little overwhelmed by, I was like, oh God, this is like, cause I'm more used to, you know, male, you know, punk vocalists. So like seeing, you know, Owen talk about stuff is like, holy shit. And then on the second listen, you know, I was more used to it. I was like, okay, this is really cool. And it's like really awesome that you guys are, you know, kind of do like Because when Ethan showed me the band, I was like, oh, okay, you know, it's more of just like whenever people show me new music, sometimes I just go, whatever.
I know
it
that
takes
feeling.
A second, right? You're like, I don't have any more room in my brain.
Yeah.
Right now, hold on.
but I am really digging your guys' album. I was like, oh, wow, this is really good. Like, I think I showed it to this girl I'm dating right now, and she was like, because I was like telling her, like, I'm not so sure. And she's like, oh, wow, I'm really, really enjoying this. I was like, oh, okay, like, well, I mean, if I didn't really care for it as much, well, I mean, I like it now, but like at the time, I was like, I don't know. But she was really enjoying it, so.
I mean, there's definitely something to be said for feeling represented.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So that goes with you, like, and for your girlfriend. So you're used to these bands that you're listening to. Sounding like you, looking like you, mm-hmm. you know, maybe some of the same emotions or blah, blah, blah. Or you get used to the way they express it and they talk about it. And then that sort of like seeps into you a little bit. And then like your girlfriend is like probably just kind of like, holy shit, a woman. This is exciting. I'm definitely giving this a chance. And while, of course, we're not a band for everyone, and certainly just because someone's a woman doesn't mean they're going to like our band.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty ridiculous. It's that idea of like, oh, someone is like me out there saying these things really loudly. Mm-hmm. And that's I don't know if you know what it's like, honestly. Like, it's just such a relief sometimes. It just feels so good to be represented when you're so often not, or you're so often misrepresented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially in hardcore music where it is just a bunch of white guys for a lot of it, for the majority of it, but then you've got these niche movements starting with Riot Girl and going on from there in the scene, like, that express truly like people who are oppressed and who actually
I say people that are actually angry for good reason.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, I honestly don't think that there's a ton of like male, you know, punk, hardcore, whatever bands that are angry for any good reasons other than they're kind of just being emo, you know. They're talking about their girlfriends or lack of girlfriends or whatever, but like the world is trying to strip away my rights. Yeah. And is constantly abusing and raping people like me and then telling us that we're overreacting and we need to deal with it. So and then of course everything that people of color are going through in this country since forever, but definitely right now in the spotlight, it's just like they have a reason to be angry. There's not a lot of, you know, it's like, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And people of color are incredibly underrepresented in the punk scene.
Yeah.
Which is still, I mean, you got Bad Brains, and then what else? Like, and you got awesome local bands and whatnot, but like, it's just still so ridiculously underrepresented, and it's frustrating. And because you have this violent skinhead, still, I mean, not as much as it used to be, but still this white and extreme skinhead majority who is kind of making it hard for other people to enjoy it. You go to
it's actually so this is what I think you really touched on something when you said, you know, there's a lot of awesome local bands.
Yeah.
Right. So there's like for me in Baltimore, like there's a ton of women in bands.
Yeah.
I wish there were more people of color in punk bands, but obviously there's a ton of artists in general here in Baltimore
doing
cool stuff. And so it's not that there are a lack of bands. It's that there is a lack of interest.
Yes. And a lack of publicity.
Lack of publicity, lack of attention, lack of money, let's be honest, being thrown at these bands, us. So it's that thing where it's kind of not on the people being oppressed to do this stuff. Like, they're doing what they can. It's on everyone else. It's on white people. It's on white men to step up. Spend their money at shows where people of color are playing. If you have a record label or you book shows or whatever, it's like, get involved with these bands, highlight these bands, book these bands. And So it's like a media thing. It's like a, you know, people behind the scenes at shows issue. The bands are there.
Yes.
So it's on the rest of us to actually support those kinds of bands with our money and go to the shows and show people that, no, we actually want more diverse voices, because I'm pretty sure I can tell you what that one white dude is mad about, just like all the other white dudes are mad about, you know?
Yeah, but you got definitely a ton of local, great local bands with not as many people of color as there should be, but like you got these great female bands. Like I know Baltimore, you have Wing Dam, who are one of my favorite local bands. I don't know if you've heard them.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, I just saw them actually at Songbird, and they're so much fun and a really cool band. Or a band like Priests, who's getting more and more noticed. And so there's these great bands, but they just need that little extra bump. But like you got you mentioned this on your end of the year list, so I'm going to bring it up as the Gloss demo, which I think is I love the Gloss demo. But it's really interesting because of the whole war incident that they're getting all this publicity. Just all like they're the one band kind of getting publicity. Them like there's a terrible Pitchfork article that was like the year in punk, and it was two awesome albums: the Downtown Boys' Full Communism and the Gloss demo. And they're like, oh, women are coming and singing about being their actual problems, but it's just two bands that are already relatively popular. We're like, okay, but what about these other awesome bands? Most of us have heard of Gloss and Downtown Boys, and for good reason, but
right. Like,
what else is out there?
Again, that's a media problem.
Yeah.
They can't it's like that thing where like mainstream radio will only have like one female artist at a time.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's it. That's enough. People can't handle any more than that.
Because, continue, Shauna. I was going to say, because I, you know, work for my college radio station, and like one of the first things he told us, like a rule is like, you know, we have to play, you know, you can't play female artists back to back. And I was just like, what? Like, that just didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it's that idea that, you know, that being a woman is somehow a genre of music.
Yes, this is something I want to get to.
Yeah, a niche, or, you know, like a gimmick or something, instead of like, oh, I don't know, we're like half the population on the planet.
Yeah, because...
like, maybe it's okay that we are every other song, because there's that many of us out there.
It's when I was Googling you or your bands, and like... The third article was, or a bunch of the articles were like top 10 women fronted bands you need to check out, or like awesome women fronted bands. Like I think it's good that people are checking out women fronted bands, but it's this weird thing that they're like listing women in bands. Like it's sometimes I get some
anomaly.
Oh wow, a woman from, it's like, they're so rare. It's like a rare Pokemon or something. It's like it's just sort of this weird thing where it's like it's trying to like separate, you know, men and women.
Yes.
Where it's just kind of like we're all.
And now think about it. Like if that's coming out of Bitch Magazine or Bust Magazine, you know, whose readership is mostly femme. Yeah, we want to know what are the cool female bands.
But it was like a dying
because we want to support. But yeah, like Dying Scene or like not to call them out, but like but to call out everyone really.
Yeah, yeah.
Then yeah, it's kind of like okay, we are just like a hardcore band too, and also I'm not the only woman in the band.
Yeah,
like to me, female fronted is like Evanescence.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like there's one woman in the band, and there's just so much like schlubs just like. Like noodling on their guitar, and like who cares, you know?
Yeah.
So like I'm not the only woman in the band. It's actually a 3/5 ratio of femmes, or this side of Butch or whatever. And like so it's a co-ed band.
Yeah.
It's not even female fronted, it's a co-ed band. It's like it's actually like the next step of instead of separating men and women and needing to know where are the men, where are the women, it's men and women working together to promote the message.
Which is something, yeah, it's, I always find it awesome when you have these co-ed bands, and the bands I was talking about earlier, Wingdam and Priest, are great examples of that. They're two awesome bands with feminist themes that are not just female, or female-fronted. They're diverse, or they're gender diverse.
Yeah.
Sorry, gender identity diverse, still not racially diverse, which is a whole nother issue that we seem to coming back to. But I want to, because this, it's just really frustrating when you see all these articles. Like, I remember Sadie Dupas, I never know how to pronounce her last name, of Speedy
Ortiz. Sadie Dupas or something? I don't know.
Got a tweet from some guy who's like, my favorite female band or female fronted band of. This festival or something, and he's like, she responded, "What was your favorite male fronted band?"
Yeah.
Or there was a my favorite was the Hard Times article, which was like, male fronted or all male bands ready to challenge punk norms or something.
That's a classic.
I love that article.
Finally, an all male.
And it's because you have these ridiculous articles, which it's good that females are getting they've been there forever, but are getting these it's a slow process, I guess, more just this is a band, co-ed, whatever, it just, and they're talking about feminism, cool, it's an important topic of the day, like
it's a hard subject for me, because like with a name like War on Women, we really are trying to make it obvious, like,
we're
a feminist punk band. There's women in this band. Hey, guys. So, like, whereas other bands, they're, you know, like whoever. Like, they're just trying to be a band.
That's fair
and,
point.
Like, Speedy Ortiz. And, like, and obviously, like, that's really important. But they're, we're trying to be fucking blatant with what we're doing. So it's like, what media, give us that. Why don't you lay all that attention on us? We'll take on that burden.
Yeah.
And leave all the other bands alone and talk to them like you would any other band.
Or maybe just like...
otherize us.
Just say feminist band instead of like female fronted bands or whatever. If I don't know,
because it's not like they're not going to run a picture with the article too. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Like we'll see, we'll get it.
I want to talk about one of your songs, called "Second Wave Goodbye," because I was just reading the lyrics to that, and I was like, "Oh shit, this is something I'm really interested in." The kind of the whole rejection of trans women and thus some of the feminist movement
or white feminism, as it's kind of been. Like determined by Tumblr is what I've heard. Is another term I've heard.
Right.
Yeah. That kind of whole aspect, which is not really evident in Third Wave. And I'm just, you lay out your thoughts in the song, but do you want to talk about it now and like non-song lyrics?
I mean, yes. Yeah. I mean, that song was actually written about a very specific person who was very vocal about her transphobia and just sort of like her and the people that follow her or fall in line with her. It just seemed like they were walking stereotypes of the second wave of feminism.
Yeah.
You know, like lesbian, butch haircut, hate trans people so much, you know, but also kind of just want to know why we can't all get along kind of thing. And it was just, she just made me so mad. Like, she's just a bully. She's a horrible, horrible person. And she's in a position of power and she abuses her power. And that's why I'm not saying her name, because if I say her name, then like she might sue me.
That's insane.
And I'm not saying that like figuratively,
no.
I'm not exaggerating. Like, that's a legit concern of mine. So it's this person who's, again, horrible, a bully. And I was just fed up with it, and I just wanted to make it really clear that, like, transphobia has no place in any future anti-oppression movements, no matter what that movement might be. Trans people have to be, you know, at the table. They have to be listened to. They have to be a part of the process. So the idea that anyone would be, like, women's rights, yay, and then be like, oh, but not you.
Not you, women.
Like, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I completely agree. And this is something I wasn't aware of until recently, because you kind of, I'm still learning about feminism, and I was kind of like assuming that, oh yeah, these people are also women, so feminists would be in favor of it, but no. And I remember, I keep coming back to Jamie Kilstein, but like I was listening to an episode of Citizen Radio where they were talking about like this one feminist who's like, I don't remember her name, but she's like, oh, they haven't had a dirty smelling vagina for, and they don't know what it's like to be a woman. And I'm like, it was, they kind of ranted on it for a while. So you can go listen to that for, basically my opinions on it too, but it was just so frustrating to hear these things from these progressive or generally progressive people who are just so backward on this thing.
Yeah. Cause then if you're positing like, well, this is what womanhood means, you know, it's like, how do you center what it means to be a woman or a man?
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Is it like that starts to put me on a path that I don't like. It's like, do I center being a woman on the fact that we are sexually assaulted? Like, yeah. Because then trans women definitely know.
Yes.
Trans women are definitely women. Yes. Right. I don't, there shouldn't be one pivot point at all. And so I kind of come at it. And now, to be fair, like as a cisgendered person, there's a ton of unlearning to do. Like, it's not like I was magically perfect day one, once I realized trans people exist. The idea that I even had to realize trans people exist, like, that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
So there's a ton of work, a ton of learning that goes on. But so I sort of come at it from like a gender anarchy perspective and like the idea that everyone should identify in whatever way they want, because like to me the ideal is that we could even get rid of those indicators at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wouldn't matter what genitalia you have, what body you have, how you identify, how you feel inside, how others perceive you. Like it would just stop mattering.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what I want to get.
Oh yeah, towards. I completely agree. And
you know, but I think that would get rid of a lot of bullshit.
And just being free to move along a spectrum wherever you feel comfortable, and just kind of, but it's so far off with all this.
Yeah, I know.
Transphobia and bureaucracy. And like, I actually really proud of myself for this moment, but my dad was, we were recently traveling, and my father, noticed on a customs form that there was a male female thing, and he's like, oh, what if someone doesn't identify as either male or female? And I'm like, Dad, you're doing so well. Yeah.
Way to go, Ethan's dad. High five.
Yeah, I was, I think it's also because he's watching Transparent, but you know, whatever gets him there.
Great starter show. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally,
yeah.
Great starter show for people. I get it.
All right, so let's move, because this is what happens. When we had Jamie on, we talked politics for so long, and I'm like, I'm thinking in the back of my mind, we got to talk music, because this is a music podcast. I'm really interested in politics, but we got to get back to music.
Now, Ethan, this is not only a music podcast.
Guitar, what effects do you use on your guitar? No,
that's boring.
Let's see. I just find it really interesting the heritage of your band, because you have Brooks, who was a guitarist for Office of Future Plans, and you're connect, and you've been in the Baltimore scene. You've been your other band you just mentioned,
yeah.
And like he's linked to Jawbox, one of my favorite bands. Like, so you have this kind of like really root, like this roots to the DC scene, so, or in the DC Baltimore scene. I know there's a bullshit rivalry between the two, but, that shouldn't really exist, because they're just great, both good cities that have great scenes. But what are you, because you came to Baltimore, so what is your connection to the area, I guess?
Brooks lived here already.
Okay.
I was playing music and living in Nashville.
Okay.
Like for high school and right after, and his band came through town. And they only had one guitar player, which was him. And I was like, you need another guitar player. And I basically just muscled my way into his band. And he was like, okay. And then I just moved to Baltimore to join that band, Vec. So we've been playing together for a really long time, writing songs together. I did play guitar in that band. We both sang. And then when that band fizzled out, I was like, you know, what if I just sing? And he's like, you know, what if I just play guitar? And so we decided to concentrate on what we're best at. And then, you know, we have Evan, Tanner, our drummer, who has played for Liars Academy and Cross My Heart and even with Hidden Hand for a while. And the P-Tanks, this old band that I am not punk enough to actually have known who they were at the time. But so he's, yeah, he's a, talk about a Baltimore DC staple. He is it. But yeah, Brooks plays bass actually in Office of Future Plans.
Okay. Robbins. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, that would make sense because he, yeah.
And I don't know, like our bass player Sue, she's from New Jersey originally, so she's been in bands playing up there forever. And Nancy was in a band called the High School Hellcats back in the day.
That's a good name.
Yeah, very sassy girl punk kind of stuff. And of course now she's like the most like metal riff playing person I know. So I like that there's a little bit of like growth there.
So you kind of got the combination of the roots from here with the outside influences. I think that's because the DC sound can kind of get stagnant a bit, or the DC Baltimore sometimes, when you got the Discord stuff from the 90s all sounding the same. In a good way, in the best way possible. Love you, Ian.
No comment.
But yeah, it's increases the diversity.
I mean, we all like all different things.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, like we'll listen to Stevie Wonder and then early Isis and then Justin Timberlake and, you know, like whatever. Like,
yeah.
I think between the five of us, the things that we enjoy are just massive. So we know what people expect from a band with women in it. We know that people expect simplicity, they expect brattiness, and they expect it to sound like Riot Girl.
Yeah.
That's what they expect. So like for me, Riot Girl has a time and a place. Like it's a really important part of my growing up. But because of that, like, to me, it's also dated.
It is, yeah.
And so, like, the idea that I would just do the same thing, like I can't. Like, it's impossible. It's not an option for me or Brooks, who was also influenced by Riot Girl. So we, as a band, you know, consciously try to make things interesting, make things heavy as fuck when we can, you know, but still keeping the humor.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, found in Riot Girl and some of the sassiness and a lot of that is just me, just like who I am. Like, I just, like, I don't know that I could hide that stuff. So
yeah,
I like to add it and kind of shake up the idea of like, well, what is heavy music supposed to sound like?
Mm-hmm.
And what is Riot Girl supposed to sound like? You know, trying to just mix all this stuff together to make something that more people can enjoy.
Take the best parts of everything.
Hopefully. And make it horrible. Yeah.
All right. I think a good way to wrap up, since it is January 3rd when we're recording this, I think a fun way to wrap up would be kind of what do you have in store for the year? Maybe if you want to reflect on last year a little bit, but that's kind of a tall order. So just maybe what do you have in store this year? If you want to talk about last year, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd say this last year, you know, we toured a lot more than I thought we did. Like looking back, I'm like, damn, we played a lot of shows. Like, so that's awesome. And honestly, I'd like to continue that. We put out our record last year. We're really, really proud of it.
And for good reason. It's good.
Oh, thank you. So we want to get it out to more people. We want more people to hear it. So we're going on tour with Anti-Flag in the middle of February.
Is that East Coast or West Coast?
No, that's West Coast and then a little bit of Texas, too.
Oh.
Sorry. I'll tell them to come to East Coast.
Yeah.
I know we'll be going to Europe again sometime this summer, playing festival circuit, which I'm really excited about. And other than that, nothing major, but I can tell you we certainly have just a treasure trove of song ideas that we need to mine through and flesh out and finish. So
I'm taking that as an album announcement, Indie Heads podcast exclusive.
Exclusive here on the Indie Heads podcast. Yeah. War and Women
coming
new
out
album coming out
Friday.
2015.
Are you gonna what was just released? You're gonna Beyonce that, like, just like release it, no announcement, just go for it.
No press.
We're not Beyonce. I don't know if we can do that. There'll be a lot of announcements.
I thought you guys were Beyonce, my bad.
Okay.
So I guess we're gonna have to end the interview now, because
I mean, again, Beyonce. I mean, War and Women's a feminist band, so I mean, it's automatically Beyonce, right?
Yeah, it's gotta be. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
You can lend us her outfits, though. That's fine. I'll be happy to wear.
I'll call up Queen Bee and let her know that you'll be willing to take her outfits.
But the Beehive's gonna be mad, though, Ethan. You gotta be careful with that.
I have no idea why I said Queen Bee. I'm so regret that.
We cannot end a show making fun of Beyonce.
No, like, she's great. No.
Let's all apologize in our heads. We know what we've done.
We apologize to the Beehive.
Okay. Thank you for coming on, Shana. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Bye, Indie Heads.
Bye.